Cape Talk. Business in Africa with Refilwe Maloto.
23 minutes past 4 o'clock. Just because you're listening to her now, Mondays to Friday, between 9 and 12 on Cape Talk, does not mean, at least for the foreseeable future, that you will not be listening to her every Wednesday afternoon at 20 past 4. I don't think John will let you go.
I don't want to let John go.
Oh, fantastic.
It's not just about discussing business in Africa. It's about discussing it with John.
I'm so sorry.
Slash Africa. Slash Africa. Oh, my God. Who wouldn't want to talk Africa with Africa? You know, it's so funny. I've got this echo. I never have the headphones. I don't know why I put them on. I feel like I'm in your chair now. All right. We're back.
Which is also your chair between 9 and 12. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank
it's
you.
Lovely to have you on the lineup. And
I've been enjoying
so refreshing.
And I've really appreciated the warm welcome from inside Cape Talk and also just the Cape in general.
You deserve every aspect of it. Now, why is your phone and my phone dangerous?
Sure. As long as it's a smartphone, right? You almost want to go back to the Nokia 3310. So we know the Democratic Republic of Congo has long been known as the world's most richest mineral base, right? From the second largest river in the world to copper, to gold, diamonds, uranium, coltan, don't even know what that is, rubber and oil. And now, of course, it is the home of 70% of the world's cobalt. And cobalt is used in smartphones, be it Samsung or iPhones, laptops, electric cars, aircraft engine parts, lithium batteries, gas turbine generators, because it is very good for implements that require corrosive and water-resistant wear, and it's also highly conductive. So if we weren't using cobalt, for example, in our lithium batteries, they'd kind of be the size of our heads. So it's a very useful thing. But the exploitation of DRC obviously dates all the way as far back as King Leopold of Belgium for the rubber, and you know, in now more recently by their own, be it warlords or sort of government participants, and also now the Chinese. And the reason it's an issue is they have they source cobalt via regular mines like we would ordinarily see in South Africa, but also in large part from what they call artisanal miners. An artisanal mine is basically a fancy way of saying ripping ore from the earth in the deadliest circumstances with zero equipment or protection with our bare hands for $2 to $3 per day.
Illegally, surely.
So this is where I say that the government is complicit as well, as much as King Leopold was. Many of these mines are guarded by armed forces, and ultimately what happens when these people go into the ground, I mean, people have like actually sometimes sleep underground and rip ore out of the ground and sell it on. This is basically blood diamond again. It's just this blood cobalt. And sell it on to primarily the Chinese. Congo, Dongfang Mining is the largest exporter of cobalt out of Congo and the third largest miner in the Congo, in DRC in general. And the trouble, of course, is, you know, it's difficult to say illegally. Again, they say artisanal miners. We speak of artisanal miners. I've seen documentaries by CNN and other news agencies where they do actually follow the cobalt all the way down to the mine. The armed guards, or the armed sort of, I can't even say guards, I mean probably members of either a militia or a sect of the army, sort of stand around and push away cameras and don't allow you to see. And they say, no, they're just playing. The kids are just playing. Because, by the way, investigations have found that some of the miners are as young as 9 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So every time you send a WhatsApp, post to Instagram, I just want you, in the same way that we do with clothes and sweatshops, just think about the people who are in that ground now, earning $2 to $3 a day. Please bear in mind that there's probably about 10 grams of cobalt in your phone, about 15 kilograms in your electric car. They cost between $20,000 to $26,000 a ton. And if Dongfang Mining is exporting 72,000 tons per year, that's $1.4 billion. Now, the reason I am skeptical about whether or not there's any protection for the people who are on the ground is that earlier, and we've spoken about cobalt before on the show, on Business in Africa. The last time I spoke about it with John was actually around the mining endeavor. There was a furor around the fact that, and things start to make sense if you think back to Pravin Gordhan's words of connect the dots. Do you remember how Joseph Kabila refused to step down and refused to have an election?
Yeah.
At the end of last year, December, he announced that now it was a strategic mineral, and the 2% royalty, 3.5% royalty was going to increase to 10%, to great furor and lots of pushback at mining and double. It was a big confusion or frustration. And if you can imagine that one that 10% translates into $144 million a year. And you can imagine anyone who's ripping ore out of the ground with their bare knuckles is not really seeing the benefit of $144 million worth of safety checks, of training, of hard hats, of mining construction. And I don't even know what the kickbacks look like. The trouble, of course, is that this is the, at least the Apple or the Samsung or the, what does Elon make now? Tesla. Is the face, is the client facing area that we could do something about. You say to them, guys, stop using that. And indeed, many action groups have gone out to the likes of these companies to say don't. And what has happened in the past is really the statement of, you know, we take the utmost care of ensuring that we use high quality, non-harmful products, but we can't be sure of what happens down the supply chain with our supplier, say the Dongfang. You're saying, yeah, but that's really kicking the can down the road, or at least fobbing off the responsibility, don't you think? Because we know that we have huge campaigns around who made your clothes. You know, we know that Phil Knight and Nike took great heat when Vietnamese sweatshops were exposed. And of course, they did something about it. And then, you know, blink, blink. And then suddenly there's one in Bangladesh. But there was some kind of action. But the frustration, I think that many action groups, and certainly for myself, in my role in investments and oversight, and my fiduciary role in investment oversight, I want to make sure that people who are invested in a pension fund that I have oversight of have an exposure to Apple because the shares are doing well. But at the same time, I want to ensure that they're not, you know, making lots of money from their portfolio to, you know, checking on the phone while somebody is dying in the ground. So I think it's something that we need to be more conscious about. And, you know, recently we've been speaking with friends and in various groups that I'm part of, or fellowships, around how is it exactly that we're supposed to approach something like this. For me, the bottom line is I think there's no greater regulator than money. And I think the investors, the big investors who are invested in the Apples and the like, much like the Norwegian sovereign wealth fund doesn't invest in environmentally harmful companies, much like Middle Eastern investors don't want to invest in sin stocks like, you know, cigarettes or beer. I think it's possible for us to actually encourage change in a company like Apple. And I have no excuse. I know it's time for headlines.
You're well trained now. It is important, though. Yeah. It's important to be, because I had no clue.
Yeah.
I use my phone with great ease because it's a tool that I need for everyday functioning. I had no clue that this is the impact it was potentially having.